You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Thursday, the 23rd of October, 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market was flat, but we'll have some more details from Elizabeth Tian from Citi, including her take on critical minerals and the latest on the gold price. But first, to working remotely, where the pandemic forced a record number of people to work from home. The ABS estimates around 53% at the peak in 2020. And while that's eased back to around 37-36% over the last 2 years, it's still about a third of employed people. And it comes as some employers push for workers to return to the office. But a landmark legal win this week by a bank employee against returning to the office has highlighted the challenges and responsibilities of both the employer and employee in such a policy. For more, Manaz Anguri spoke with workplace law expert at UTS, Associate Professor Giuseppe Carbetta.
I guess what doors do you think this will open for other employees in similar situations? Do you imagine more people will come forward and request working from home rights?
Oh, there's always that, you know, people get carried away with these decisions. I think you've really got to, it may happen. We've also got proposals in the background to vary one of the major awards, the Clark's Award, which you may know about as well. But I don't think it's going to have a floodgate effect, because these cases are dealt with, you know, on their individual circumstances. I think if employers can just get used to how to deal with these processes, it shouldn't be that. I don't think it's going to be that dramatic. I think we will end up somewhere in the middle, which is kind of nice. And it's great for carers. It's great for women who want to participate. And, you know, unfortunately, women do more than men. So there is that equity element as well. But if we can get like a truly hybrid situation, depending on the nature of work, okay, it has to be based on that. I don't think it's going to cause major tidal waves, no.
So how important or how significant do you think it is for employers to be able to, you know, manage and, you know, wrap their head around all of this, especially given how much the landscape of working has changed since COVID, and especially with modern day working in the office, things like virtual meetings and things like that? Yeah.
Yeah, great question. I think that employers really need to, you know, you can by all means have a policy, but your policy needs to be consistent with the Fair Work Act and these what we call the National Employment Standards. There's one section in those standards, but it's a fairly detailed section. You've just got to make sure that you have an avenue for protected categories, like people with disabilities, like elderly people, like carers, that you have an avenue to consider their cases individually. So you can have your broad policy, but your policy, firstly, can't be inconsistent with the National Employment Standards. Can't undercut that. Can't undercut those, obviously. And it should also be, it should emphasise that each case is dealt with on its merits. Not, you can't have a wholesale approach. As much as you may want to, you know, one of the big arguments that I see again and again from employers, and employers are getting used to this, let's be fair, but they say, well, I don't want to set a precedent. You know, if I let this person through, it's going to be disruptive or whatever. Well, that's, you know, that's not going to fly with the commission. If a person has a legitimate reason to request a flexible work arrangement and it doesn't erode, you know, your business, so things like the way you deal with clients, your productivity, your efficiency, you know, not so much things like teamwork and that kind of thing, which sure, there are merits there, but the commission will ask for more concrete factors. And let's remember again, employers can, if they do it correctly, they can adduce evidence and they can refuse a request on reasonable business grounds.
That's Manaz Anguri speaking with Associate Professor Giuseppe Carabetta from UTS. Let's take a closer look at the Australian share market now, which did finish flat. The S&P ASX 200 up only 0.03%, 9,032. Still, there was some movement on the ASX because the energy sector really outperformed, up by 3.2% after the oil price surged overnight. For more on the day's market action, including her take on the gold price and critical minerals, I spoke with Elizabeth Tian from Citi. Liz, so the Australian share market is still trading at close to record levels. How would you describe investor sentiment at the moment, and what exactly is driving it?
So, Ricardo, it really is, I think, a little bit of a tug of war at the moment with where markets are. Obviously, Australia, US markets, virtually at all-time highs. And that really, you know, investors are trying to kind of weigh up. Am I in with the AI story? Because we all know about the AI story. A lot of capital and investments, you know, the Magnificent Seven doing, you know, their share prices have been rocketing. They keep going up and up and up. So that's one side of this kind of tug of war. But on the other side, we've got, you know, questions around things like fiscal debt, you know, US, you know, fiscal debt's going up, inflation. What does that mean? What's the Fed's going to do? And of course, the tariffs. So it's almost like markets are whipsawing. You know, on Monday, it's all about tariff wars. If, you know, on Friday, Trump had a tweet, and then 2 days later, oh no, that's okay. Let's go back to AI. We're hearing, you know, a lot of these companies announce, and, you know, the US reporting season so far has been pretty good. They've been beating expectations. So markets continuing to go up. But because valuations are quite high, especially in the US, markets are kind of really priced for perfection. So we all know, you know, at the next tweet, any sound of bad news, you know, there's a big pivot to where investors are looking.
Okay, so you mentioned AI. There's another theme that happened, especially this week, and that's gold, right? Gold seeing big swings in recent days. So too oil. More recently, oil up today after the US announced sanctions on Russia's biggest producers. What's your take on these commodities?
And that's exactly right, Ricardo. You know, gold is really tied up into this big macro geopolitical story, you know, tied into the US fiscal debt. And the run-up in gold, you know, it's been an extraordinary run, especially even more so the last couple of months. And that's raising, it's because of questions around not just the US fiscal debt, but central banks around the world. You know, we've looked at France, we look at Japan, and obviously the US. So, you know, we're hearing words like debasement. Are people kind of hedging away from just holding US dollars, US treasuries, wanting to hold gold? We've seen all those lines, you know, people lining up for gold bars. And we think, you know, we were quite bullish on gold, but just recently, especially with a very recent sell-off, that's huge volatility, you know, volatility not seen in decades. We've kind of pared back our gold call. We think there could be a bit of consolidation at around these $4,000 gold price per ounce. Now, a couple of things that investors need to look at re-gold is, obviously, we've got some very key meetings going in the next couple of weeks, you know, geopolitically. Trump, is he going to meet Xi? You know, all these negotiations, is that going to really temper down a lot of this geopolitical talks and tariff wars? And then, you know, give a bit of, you know, it's a lot of nervousness around the markets. So watch out for that in terms of the gold price. And then obviously on oil. So we are oil. We were expecting oil to trade around $60 a barrel. Always obviously went down to those levels. It's jumped up on the recent announcement. Now, regarding oil, we think that it really is, again, tied back to geopolitics. If Trump can kind of negotiate a deal faster between Ukraine and Russia, we could see oil trade back lower to even around $50 to $55 US dollars a barrel.
Now, speaking of geopolitics, it's not just oil and gold, it's also critical minerals, rare earths, right? This is a long question, but I want to put it into context for our audience, and I'm keen to get your take on the sector. Shares have surged a lot in critical minerals in the lead up to that Australia-US supply agreement earlier this week, but have recently pulled back. A lot of it is based on Australia becoming a growing supplier. Interestingly, today, we saw an RBA research paper was released today, but compiled before this agreement between Australia and the US. So that's important to point out. But it says it's cooled some of those expectations, saying that the outlook is uncertain and depends on a range of factors like the speed of the global energy transition, the take-up of different technologies like EVs, global prices, and the competitiveness of global production, because you've got the likes of China, India, and Brazil also in this space. So what's your view on the sector, especially in light of the stellar performance of so many of these rare earths players or those in critical minerals? Because the other thing is, while the new deal between Australia and the US secures supply and some investment, like the RBA pointed out in its note today, projects will still take years to come to life.
Absolutely, Ricardo. So to give a bit of context, if we're kind of really, talk about rare earths first, China began their whole look at the whole supply chain, where, the mining plus the refining back in 1980s. And Deng Xiaoping apparently in 1992 said, the country is going to focus on rare earths. So they've been looking at this for decades. They've been building out the, the mining and the refining, and obviously they dominate with 90% of refining. Around 90% are dominated by China, and same thing with magnets. So they're decades into this. The other thing that I guess investors need to also look at is the reason China has been so strong in rare earths is because the business itself is quite a high pollution processing. And, this was kind of outsourced in a way to China, who was prepared to take this on. And obviously now countries like the US, Australia, if we're going to refine it and we've got these, this polluting refinery, what are the regulations we have in place? How do we, it's quite a complicated process. So, obviously we saw the announcement earlier this week. There was a little bit of a pullback since that announcement. There's also the different grades in refining in rare earths. So you can go to the very, very refined spectrum, which China once again is, dominates globally in. And that very refined, end of rare earths, I believe it's 99.999%, but, don't quote me. That feeds into the semiconductor space. And with the semiconductor space, when you've got less refined rare earths, that can go into things like EVs, but it's that very refined rare earths that's needed for things like semiconductors, which obviously feeds into this whole AI race between the US and China as well. So countries obviously scrambling around this. But I think it is a very, it's not a 12-month, 6-month thing. Experts are saying it can be 5, 10 years before there is real catch up.
Okay. And finally, what are you telling your clients right now? Where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Oh, look, I think, as we were saying before, markets are sitting on quite a high valuation, but there is the whole AI story. US is in the middle of reporting season. You've got some companies, selling off like overnight with Netflix, et cetera. The thing for investors to keep a watch out on, obviously we haven't had a lot of economic data come out of the US because, because the government's got this lockdown at the moment. So we do have the CPI numbers coming out of the US next week. That's going to be very key. Some of the tailwinds is not only AI, but it's also obviously when we start getting this data back from the US, the markets are pricing in a couple of rate cuts by the Federal Reserve, and that's going to be a tailwind, obviously, for markets. But it will be interesting, all eyes, I think, on the meeting, possible meeting between Trump and Xi, whether they can kind of temper this down or it actually escalates. Don't forget, overnight, Trump has said, well, we're going to look at export controls now on software to China, on aircraft parts to China. So is it going to escalate or temper down?
That's Elizabeth Tian there from Citi, and she wraps up the podcast for this Thursday. Don't forget, if you enjoy it, to give it a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Click that subscribe button. I'm away tomorrow. Stephanie Youssef will fill in, and I'll see you on Monday.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.